Welcome to Dollars and Cents, Wealth, Wisdom, and Well-Being, the podcast where we dive into thought-provoking topics with today's leading experts. I'm John Carolyn, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager for Main Street Wealth Management Group.
And I'm Mark Lopez, Senior Vice President, Olympic Silver Medalist, and Certified Financial Planner. We've got a fascinating conversation lined up for you today.
And today we're excited to welcome Tanya Curry, Principal Associate of Lifestyle Ranch and Home Group, and her teammate, Rick Doak. Tanya and her team are leaders in Texas ranch and land sales with over $53 million in sales in 2023 alone. Big number. Well, together, they help clients secure dream properties across South Central Texas, and we're thrilled to have you both on the show.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. Great to be here.
All right. Let's kick things off with some fun trivia. Texas is known for its massive ranches, but what's the largest ranch in the state? And can you guess how many acres it covers?
That's an easy one. Everybody probably knows this, or should. That's the King Ranch down in South Texas. Founded in 1853, and it covers 825,000 acres.
Wow.
Well, second would be the Briscoe Ranch in and around, down around the Uvalde area, and they're about plus or minus 600,000 acres.
I mean, that's enormous. So I guess to picture it for city slickers up in the New York area, that's about the size of Rhode Island. Is that right?
That's correct.
King Ranch. Yes.
That is correct.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Interesting. Any buyers or sellers of that? Is that going to stay where it's at forever, or do these people have any idea if they're going to sell a piece of it? Have they sold a piece of it over time?
He's a city slicker, can you tell?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, typically families like this have legacy trusts and things put in place that just keeps on running. And that, by the way, that 825,000 acres is here in Texas, and they own land in many other states. There's a lot of land in Florida, more land up here, grass farms. They're into the turf business, so they own parcels scattered around everywhere, not just South Texas.
All right. Well, thanks for that
answer.
It's
incredible business. Well, Tanya, your team has become a go-to for luxury ranch properties in Texas. Tell us a little bit about your personal journey and how you've gotten to where you are today.
Well, nothing real exciting here, but I will tell you, moved to Washington County back in 2006 and really got full-time with this career in 2013. Very early on, I was able to understand the luxury market. I have a keen knowledge of high expectations of what they expect in when they're looking at luxury ranch properties. So one of the most rewarding aspects of my career has been helping some legendary individuals, but building personal relationships with them, that's been a real plus. But first, I'd always say I always tell my team, there are no shortcuts in this business. It's hard work. There's no magic button. It's what you put in, you get out. And I've always been not one that's competitive against other people. I don't tend to focus on other people in the business. I tend to focus more on myself. Myself as being the most competitive person I go against. So that being said, I have a lot of high expectations for myself. And my clients are actually, no surprise, are my priority. I put them as the priority and I focus on them. I joined Compass about real estate. That's our broker of record out of Houston Westheimer office. I joined them about 5 years ago. I wanted to partner with a firm, a brokerage or name that would kind of bridge that urban market with the rural market. In our areas, in most areas of small town USA, you have these small boutique, which are great. I wanted something that could provide more tools, more of a network. And it really has paid off and worked really well. I can say this with full confidence. With Compass, the PR department they have there is the best in the business. It's been instrumental in getting my listings out there to platforms and to be the top of the charts. I mean, the SEO that it pulls is incredible. But finally, you know, I started building a team probably about 4 years ago. Started that slowly. I was very deliberate. I wasn't going out trying to, you know, find the numbers. I wanted the quality, not the quantity. And so I was looking for individuals like myself that could work independently, but come together cohesively when needed. So, and that's what we've created. We've got, I think, 9 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we've got a total of 9. Again, I don't seek, they come to us for what we do. And it's been great. We're just a group of knowledgeable professional people. We've got a brick and mortar in Brenham, Texas. So we kind of worked out of that office, and I just opened a new one in Anderson on 90. So we're kind of hitting that market a little bit more.
Fantastic.
So it's been great. Yeah.
Congratulations so far on your success.
Thank you. Thank you.
Like-minded individuals attracted to each other and doing good by doing well.
That's exactly right.
All right. So, Rick, I understand you had an exciting career flying planes. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that experience and how it has helped you become a Top Gun in ranch sales?
All right. Well, I grew up as a teenager, and my first real job was working on a purebred Santa Gertrudis ranch. It was called Superior Land and Cattle Company, which is now out in the area of Southwest Houston, the A-Leaf area. Back then, Westheimer was a two-lane road. I mean, literally from Gessner, as far out as you could go, two lanes. The only thing out there was Superior Land Cattle Company and Uncle Ben's Rice. So I got a job out there working, growing up, working cows, cowboy, doing the FFA thing in high school, had a grand champion heifer. I was actually the president of the Midcoast Junior Santa Gertrudis Association back in, like, I don't know, 73 or so. The one thing that was really cool about that job was that Superior Land and Cattle Company was owned by Superior Oil Company, who was owned then by Howard Keck, the Howard Keck that the observatory is named after.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So they had about a 4,000-foot paved strip on the ranch out there with a big hangar by their oil laboratories up the front of the ranch. And he kept a couple of Stearmans in there and then some of his sailplanes. He was an avid glider pilot. And so he'd come in from California every once in a while, and he'd come out there and fly those planes. And it was just so fascinating that I took that. And then on the other side of the ranch happened to be Andrew Airport, which is now a luxury subdivision in West Houston. But I'd take my cowboy money and go over there and took my first flying lesson when I was 15 years old. And I thought, man, this is it. So with that, I just continued on taking flying lessons and got my private pilot's license, my instrument, multi-engine, all that, and then went through college, instructor and all. Anyway, I had some pretty good flying gigs, and I got hired by Continental Airlines in 1985. And so I worked my way up. I'm a captain. I retired. I did an early out because I was doing farm and ranch real estate. So it all kind of melded together. My ranch work that I still love, still involved with, like, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. I'm a lifetime member on the International Committee, and I'm still heavily involved in the county fairs and things like that. But those are two of my loves, was ranching and flying, and they just help work together. So
that's pretty cool.
Let me ask, because you had mentioned this earlier, gliders. Mm-hmm. So, like, where they pull the little plane with the motor, and then they just let you go.
Yep, correct.
If you're up there with like a paper airplane.
Correct. You'd have one of his corporate pilots that was flying the Stearman, which is an old biplane, and they would pull him up to several thousand feet, release the tow rope, glider circles back around and lands, and then he's catching thermals and just flying around over the farm and ranch fields out there. And the goal was to stay up as long as he could.
That's so cool. So cool. Well, I got a question for you. So for those listeners who might be considering buying their first ranch, I understand it's not as straightforward as it seems. So what are some common pitfalls or challenges the buyers face when they're purchasing a ranch that they might not be aware of?
That's a great question. That's when we stress a lot. Yeah. So one of the biggest challenges we see is when people come out and they are buying a ranch or land, and especially for the first time, and they have not done enough due diligence. That's why it's very, very imperative to have someone on your side, on your team, mm-hmm. that's got some experience in this field. It's not a residential lot and block by no means. There's a lot more to it when purchasing land. You have to understand there's oil and gas issues and minerals and surface rights that you really need to be familiar or have the resources to understand what those are on that property. Things like easements and pipelines, even the soil types can affect what you do on that property. Water and electricity, which are the blood in the veins to the property, are they available? What is it going to cost to get it? Things like that can make a huge impact on your investment.
So you guys really, you really educate your customers when they go out there.
Absolutely.
And I might add the water issue too. Now, on top of all that Tanya talked about, we have wind rights, we have solar, we have all these other now added areas of concerns. Water's a big thing. It's a huge thing all over, but it's huge here in Texas. You need to really know the water that's underneath the ground where you're looking at purchasing a property. You need to know a good water well driller. You need to know the aquifers. if you're in a water district in Texas, is there any rules and restrictions on what you can use? Have the water rights been reserved or sold to a city such as Houston or San Antonio? If so, you're only allowed for your domestic use. That's for your house, your livestock, just your own use. So it gets very complicated. That, and as Tanya mentioned, the minerals is a whole nother area we could talk about all day.
Well, and I would guess that you guys probably have a big network of specialists and people that
absolutely
you can take clients to help navigate through all these things.
Absolutely, and we highly recommend that.
Such example for minerals, there's no landman or attorney that's going to ever guarantee. It's never a guarantee. It's always an opinion, and they're going to state that. So we never go in and say, oh, it's got this or that. We always refer them to an attorney for that. We recommend it highly. You know, most countries, the state or the government owns the minerals. Mm-hmm. You know, Texas, you know, United States is the exception to that. So people don't understand there's so many different parts to that that could be moving and so many breaks of that. Sure. And what it looks like. Can they come on my property? How far can they come on my property? There's so many aspects to that that can control the usage of the property. So if you're coming out and you're buying a property and you're not familiar with that and you purchase that property, we see it time and time again, depending on how they got acquired that property, they can't sell the property. So it makes it very difficult.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Wow. There's a lot more to it. There's a lot to it.
And that also a big, big deal here is the environmental assessment that needs to be done. I mean, they need to be aware of threatened endangered species, wetlands, many other issues that could cause big problems on a piece of property they're considering purchasing.
As you can tell already, like John had said, I'm pretty much a city slicker. I have no exposure to ranches. My only exposure to ranches are that movie City Slickers with Billy Crystal. I mean, I thought that looked like
fun. You're not alone.
Yeah.
Don't worry about
it. Okay, well, good.
Yeah.
Well, Tanya, I understand ownership of a ranch is different than regular houses and regular residential real estate. Can you give us a little bit on how ranch ownership offers a lifestyle like no other?
Yeah.
And can you share some of the biggest joys and success stories that your clients have had?
So, you know, clients have many reasons for coming out that are deeply personal, obviously, but typically, it's the desire to have some privacy, some freedom, and just having their own retreat type thing where they can disconnect from their fast-paced life in the city within, say, a two-hour range of any metro area. That's typically what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. They want to get to something on a weekend. They don't want to have to get on an airplane or go through customs. So this is kind of what they're looking at, and it's something they can have as a legacy at some point. But yeah, it's nice to see some of these sell and stay in touch with these people or become friends with these people and come back and see what they've done to these properties afterwards. For example, a couple of them I've sold, one was a private use ranch and it turned into this iconic vacation resort called Milk and Honey out in Burton. And it's gone, viral on Instagram. And they did this within a year after purchasing it. It's totally transformed and they're good. It's done a lot for the community and even globally, this ranch out there. They do a lot of things, I don't know if you've been out there yet, but have you? Yeah, it's great. And then there was another one I sold last year and it was, this Forbes top 5-star resort and it's now transformed into a private personal ranch. Mm. So, it's nice to see these transitions of how things can go from one direction to another and see how that turns out. So you never know.
That's pretty cool. And we have some clients that have their own private planes.
Oh, absolutely.
Do ranches have the ability to have like a landing strip for these private jets?
Absolutely. In fact, I sold a pretty famous ranch here three or four years ago now down south. It was called the Wolf Point Ranch and the Wolf Point Club. Privately owned, had an 18-hole golf course, which was rated, I think it was number 96 or 97 out of the top 150 golf courses in the world. Hmm. And it's been in all the golf magazines, et cetera. But they had a 5,000-foot paved runway built to TxDOT spec, a hangar that was a massive hangar that you could just eat off the floor. We sold that to Dorme Golf Network, so they're now converting that over to a private place. But I sold a ranch in 2011 that kind of gets back to what you asked Tanya, to a fellow, great guy, good friend of mine. We'd been looking for a place, just the right place. And And I found it. He was in the oil business, and it's actually, I'm sure many of your clients have been out there. Maybe they're even members, but it's called the Big Easy Ranch. Mm. And it's west of Houston out near Columbus. But sold that to him, and it was going to be a hunting operation for all of his clients and a place to bring drillers and all you know, everybody in the oil business out and entertain them and put them on some deer like they've never seen. Billy Soul did well, and he said, you know, I've got a different dream for this place. So that's when the Big Easy Ranch started really taking off, and now it's 2,000 acres, a private club, championship, just named number one new championship course in Texas, the Covey. Beautiful, incredible place with homes, and we're actually selling some lots and homes out there at the Big Easy Ranch. So his goal and his vision and his dream has kind of morphed into to what it is now. And you see that a lot,
too. That's pretty cool. I had one more question on the uses of ranches and why people want to buy a ranch. Mm. So I watched a show called The Walking Dead, which has to do with zombies, right? And when I'm watching the show, I'm thinking,
we don't have zombies.
The best thing to have during a zombie apocalypse or any type of apocalypse would be a ranch. And with the elections coming around, you know, people start talking about weird things going on, conspiracy theories and whatever. Do you see some people wanting to buy a ranch just to be away from civilization in case, you know, the X hits the fan?
100%.
Yes. It's so crazy. Back in 2020 when COVID hit, it started happening and they locked down on us. And we were sitting out there going, oh my gosh, we're out of business. Literally, we thought we're not going to be able to sell or do anything. Nobody's coming up. Mm-hmm. It absolutely was the complete opposite effect of that. In fact, I still say, I make a joke, I have PTSD from 2020 and 2021. Literally, I probably didn't get a day off for months at a time. I would come home at 8 o'clock at night, leave at 6 in the morning, get on my computer, catch up till midnight, and go again the next day. And it was like that. I mean, we had multiple offers. People were just, it was that mindset of, I've got to get out. I've got to have some space. I've got to get to where I can function. And that's when we went from a demographic we typically saw of retirees aging out to more of a middle age with young children that had the means to do it. We're coming out and looking at moving everything out there for the family. And that's where I think we had that pivotal change in our market of type of buyers. And so it did happen, and it was, I still have to take a breath sometimes to think about that.
I think it's still happening too. You know, years ago, people moved from the rural parts of America into the cities. I think we're actually on the beginning of a trend that's just basically a demographic shift. I mean, I see it. I live it. These people are, especially younger people, are wanting to get out of the cities. Yeah. And I'll talk about Houston and Austin because that's what we're closest to. But many, many younger folks are wanting to get their young children out of the city. Houston schools, for example, we've got some new highways headed out toward, you know, 249, all that. They're moving out to cities like Navasota, like Brenham, like wherever they can go, Texas Grand Ranch. There's a lot of places out here that these people are, they're doing what you're talking about. They want a nice, safe place to live that's as free of crime as it can be. They got to have high-speed internet. They want to be close to some good medical facilities. It's, you know, it's pretty close by anyway. And what's the last thing you got to have? An HEB. True story. But that's what they're looking for.
It's incredible when you think back at the pandemic and how, I mean, it changed so many things. And we're seeing that too. We were talking about it earlier, where people that, I guess they realized they didn't have to work in an office, and then now they're moving out and they want more space, want more quiet. I think it's a healthier quality of life, right? It's more zen.
Yeah.
Than the go.
Everybody's wanting to get back to nature, back to the roots, of what is good. And all of this processed everything, they're just, I think, done. And they want to come out. And they're still within a, you know, with the communication, the technology we have today, it's available. And they can do that. So that's why I don't think we're going to see it slow down. I think we've seen a slowdown in general this year, of course, because of all the, you know, obvious. But we definitely are getting ready. I've told the team we're getting ready to ramp up and start things pretty strong, I think, in the first of the year. So
that's exciting.
Yeah.
That's yep. exciting stuff.
Yep. We're members of the Greater Brazos Valley Builders Association as well. And this whole Brazos Valley, from Brenham over toward the Conroe area, Woodlands area, and up College Station, Bryan, it's just on fire. And people, they're so excited. I actually had to change the restrictions in one of my developments we did here because the restrictions didn't allow for chickens. We weren't going to sell a lot if we didn't change that and put chickens in there. And we did. And everybody wants to get out here. And that's one of their main things, their first things. They want to have a hen house. They want to have their own farm fresh eggs. They want to plant their garden. And then they learn about deer and all the other things associated with that. But yeah, I mean, what Tanya said, it's just, it's kind of a trend of getting back to your roots.
Sure. Yeah. That's and cool. And so our listeners can't see this, but we're looking at three beautiful bottles of honey. And so, Rick, that kind of brings me to the next question is, what are unexpected financial perks of owning a ranch and like tax incentives? I know you were talking about, I'll let you educate us more about the ag exemption that we were talking about, but tell us a little bit about some of those things.
Well, that's perfect lead in because I don't mean to be rude, but I'm going to correct it. There is no such thing as an agricultural exemption.
What?
It's commonly used. Everyone calls it an ag exempt. Is it ag exempt? Is it ag? Well, there's not. In Texas, you really only have a few things that are actual exemptions. One is your residential homestead exemption, your inherited residential homestead exemption, age 65 or older or disabled persons exemption, your surviving spouses of first responders, solar and wind-powered energy device, or charitable organizations and businesses. But there is no ag or wildlife exemption. In Texas, it's called a 1D1 open land valuation. That's what it's referred to. Every tax appraiser office, that's what it's called. And what that does is it's taxing you on the sustainable value of that land, not the market value of the land. So you could have a 100-acre place out here that commercially might be worth, I don't know, $10 million and paying, whatever the going tax rate is on it. And under ag or wildlife, open land valuation, you might only pay $400 or $500 a year.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Okay.
So that right there is an enormous incentive for where your clients like need to put some money, it in land. They need to make sure that it is actually ag valuation or wildlife. You can have it one way or the other, and that each county is, you got to get with each county to see what they require. But that property tax deductions, anything you do, if you're in a farming operation, and you don't have to do it yourself. I mean, such as a hay operation, you want to buy 100 or 200 acres, you find this beautiful place out in the country, and it's been ag valued. So the taxes are very low, and you want to keep it that way. Tanya and I find people that'll maintain it and cut hay off of it, and that qualifies as ag. So you keep your taxes very, very low. It's not like in the city. You also can have a wildlife plan. You mentioned the honey. That's part of a wildlife plan right there, honeybees. And it keeps it under a wildlife valuation and keeps your tax rate very, very low.
A question for us city slickers. When you talk about sustainable value of your land, what do you mean by that?
Well, your agriculture value, let's say, what can it produce as far as a cow-calf operation?
Gotcha.
What kind of income? Or an equestrian operation or a hay operation or a farm, farming it for hay or cotton or corn or whatever.
Well,
majority of people that are coming out that are city slickers, they don't know what a blade of grass. No, and I mean that respectfully. They don't, and they don't want to, and they don't need to.
Sure.
So our job is to help them maintain this with as little effort as possible. And typically what we see, and either it's already set up or we can help them set up, is something, for instance, a hay meadow, okay? Uh-huh. You don't have to deal with anything live. You just have someone come over and shred it, however many times a year. They take the hay. In exchange, you get the valuation. So it's just a real easy, maintainable thing for someone that has this as a second property. They work this out, and they're taking care of the property, looking at the property. And typically, they'll keep what's on there. They'll just keep the person. And the function of the, if it's cattle, hay, whatever it is, and we try to work that out, and they usually want to keep what's in place. If you want to change it, that's option two. That's an option. For instance, we've got Kerry Dietzman. He's actually the president of the Wildlife Association for Washington County. So he likes to go out just because he loves it and help them create a plan for a wildlife, which is very easy to maintain once
that's
you
cool,
get it in place.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's things like that. But if it doesn't, you need to go through the process of getting it. And that can take a lot of time. It can take up to 5 years to put it back in.
We also find that, like a cow-calf operation, where just a recent sale I did near Brenham, where we sold 80-something acres, and the people that bought it were just as happy as could be, didn't know a cow from a camel. But they wanted to keep that ag valuation and keep those taxes low. So we made a deal with another cow-calf operator, and he put his cows in there, and he keeps it up. He keeps their fences up, keeps everything mowed and trimmed, and they're happy as can be, and they get to look out at these beautiful cows, but they don't have to feed them, water them, take them to the vet, nothing. They just, they're there and taken care of.
That's cool.
You know, it sounds to me, and this is, you guys are obviously really good at what you do. I'm getting a picture of someone coming out, and they have a dream in their mind. And you're making this dream, you're maximizing it, you're making it bigger. You're telling them, well, did you ever think about this and this? And you must get people that they come in, like you said, they don't know a blade of grass, they don't know anything about cattle. And all of a sudden, it sounds like a wonderful, rewarding thing that you guys are doing.
It is. It really is.
It really is. And some more answers, you know, your wildlife, you've got the depreciation benefits on anything they buy, you know, setting up fences, fences, barns, building, et cetera. And all this needs to be run by your CPA course, but all that can be depreciated out. Very good for estate planning. You see a lot of these legacy ranches out there being put into these trusts and things. As we mentioned before, you got capital gains tax deferrals. Also tax credits on conservation practices on a lot of these places too. And you'll find a lot of the wealthier people will put their land in a conservation trust. And that has huge tax benefits, federal tax benefits. Again, consult your CPA.
1031. We see a lot of 1031s too. In fact, I'm working on one right now. Those are beneficial. And once sell, they can use that because they're going to build equity on these properties, especially with the land, and they'll be able to take that and use that as well on these properties. So it's another it's a common one you see out there.
That's fascinating. It's so many perks. So, Rick, let me ask you this. So you've been on the ground with a lot of these clients. What's one or more unexpected challenges or surprises that a buyer might face when purchasing a ranch? I imagine managing this land is very different from buying a home. You've already explained a lot of it, but does anything pop out in your mind?
Well, again, you got to be careful about the environmental concerns when you purchase a place. You don't want any of those surprises. You don't want to find out that there was an old cattle dipping vat out there. What's out there in the woods? Oh, that was a cattle dipping. You want to know that before. You don't want to buy a place because that's arsenic and all kind of bad stuff, you know. So unexpected things, it's just, you know, if you're running cattle and you've got somebody taking care of them, you want to make sure, you don't want to get a call in the middle of the night that your cows are out on the highway. That could be one of the unexpected things. But for the most part, I mean, it's just a real laid back, great way of life. And there's not a lot of unexpected problems. And that's why it's so nice when people get to their place. And I make the joke, when I cross that Brazos River up here, my wife says, there you go, let out that breath. And I'm like, ah, I'm glad to be back home, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's true.
Now, I know you've mentioned a couple of these things already, but speaking of the ranch management part of things, do you ever help guide buyers on what's involved after the purchase? I know, Tanya, you mentioned water rights and land use restrictions. Mm-hmm. But how about like managing livestock or hunting leases?
Absolutely. We're one-stop shop. That's the good thing. I mean, this is our community too. We all of us live there full time. So we get a lot of repeat business. These things are often come up and we become the community and friends and the resource for them. So ranch, you know, management contractors, we have an array of those available. Our network is huge for the co-op ag and wildlife office, you know, people there for the Texas A&M, the extension office, they're a world of information. So, I mean, there's going to be so much more involved that you're going to need for these properties. And so it's real important in these small towns, these small communities, unless you've got someone that can connect you to these people, good luck. Because if you're coming out there and no offense, but if your agent that came out from, you know, one of these urban areas to help you, you're done from that point forward.
It's like the blind leading the blind.
You're just there now. And what do you do? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I've noticed. And it just kind of, it really affects them after the sale. They don't have that resource and those resources available and someone to go to and say, I get texts all day long. You do too, from past clients. Hey, just by the way, do you have this or can you send me that? You know, and we love to do that. You know, we love to have appreciation days for our clients and we like to do things for them and to stay in that communication with them. In fact, a lot of them that's come out and bought that I had the listing. In fact, I've got one I just listed that the buyers, and I appreciate him for this. He comes out with his buyer. He said, Tanya, I'm going to tell you, I don't know the first thing about this. And I said, well, you know what? I appreciate you saying that. I really do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that now that he had to list the property, he came, he goes, Tanya, you're listing my property. I said, okay, I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it.
We actually talked driving down here today about building or adding to our website and building a vendor list. I mean, this happened just twice in the last 2 weeks where I've had two different people say, well, I need to know how I get a 911 address, da, 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 da. I said, well, that depends in Washington County on where they put a culvert. And they said, well, what's a culvert? Well, what do you mean, what's a culvert? Okay, well, that's where we dig a trench at the front of your property and they bury a pipe around, depending the size, depending on what the county tells you you need right there, and cover it with rock and dirt, and that's how you drive in and out of your property. Oh, okay. Your address is dependent on where exactly that culvert is placed on your property. But things like that, simple things like, okay, well, a culvert, where do I get a culvert? Here, I got the number right here. So we're going to build a database of all the providers for dirt, for roads, for shredding, for culverts, for water wells, for septic people that you can count on. And it just goes on and on and on. But that's a great part of what we do.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's cool.
I can't imagine that just from this conversation that we're having right now, going to buy a ranch, something that I don't know that much about, with someone that doesn't know much about it either.
It happens.
I mean, that's...
Well, we see it in the financial planning world,
too. That's
true.
I'm sure you do.
It happens in every profession.
In fact, we were talking about this the other day, that it really... This is a whole other can of worms, but Trek, you know, probably NAR starts there, needs to probably designate that area, farm and ranch, like it does commercial. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't work and lump into the residential real estate. It doesn't. There's a lot of things that
can
affect the consumer in a negative way if that person is not familiar with those type of properties.
And you've built this experience, right? That from years and years and years of helping people solve these problems, growing up around it, it's not something that anybody can get overnight.
No.
One of the things that I've awakened many times in the past 20 years thinking, oh my God, did I get that? Did I get that reservation of oil and gas and other minerals signed? It's a form. It's a Trek form that if you don't sign that form, reserving whatever portion of the mineral estate for that seller, if that's not signed and part of the contract, guess what? Every ownership of the minerals goes to the new buyer. Just boom, it's gone. So those people lose everything. I mean, there's a lot of gotchas here.
That's a big gotcha.
Got to be careful about.
We've learned the hard way, obviously. We've all made our mistakes and it's cost us. It's cost our clients, you know, but those mistakes are valuable.
Absolutely.
And so those are the things that have built our knowledge base. It has helped us to instruct and train as well. So it's definitely... Yeah, one little signature can cost them thousands and thousands of dollars. So we have to really be in tune to that and know what is required and what's necessary on the front end.
And we always recommend and have several available oil and gas attorneys. And I highly recommend before you do anything, that you consult an oil and gas attorney.
We definitely recommend that and encourage that on these properties.
Point taken.
Yeah.
So Rick, you had mentioned earlier, you know, when you're driving and you're crossing the Brazos and you let that sigh of relief, the air out. What other lifestyle benefits do you see that these new ranch owners are enjoying the most?
Well, I think just that and creating memories. I mean, that's the thing, bringing their families out, their friends, their families. I mean, it's just a Texas thing. I mean, I used to love to hunt. I still like to hunt, but it's not big priority for me. It's being around the campfire, the fire pit, cooking, hanging out with the guys and the gals or wives or whoever, and just having those times and those football on TV and your college games going in the farmhouse or the ranch house or a big screen out on the patio, having that fire pit lit up, barbecuing, have a brisket going, hunting dove. I mean, September in Texas, I mean, this is just the life. I mean, you know, it's time to get out in the field and bag some doves, and quail season's now just opened up. So we're going into the cooler weather and quail and deer and duck. And it's definitely a lifestyle thing that I know many of your clients understand and know very well.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of them are smiling right now listening to it.
Oh, yeah. It's making me want to get out and get a shotgun out.
I mean, you said it. You're building memories, makers.
You're right? Building memories. And it goes back to some of the other questions you'd asked, too, about it's building a legacy. A lot of these ranches, when you buy a ranch, I mean, how can I keep this in my family? my kids, get them out to enjoy it, and then their right. kids, my grandkids, and just how can we keep it going and pass it on from generation to generation? And we see a lot of that. Unfortunately, it also goes the other way, that we're seeing a lot of these second, third generations that don't care one yeah. bit about being out in the country, and as soon as grandpa dies, they want to sell it. Mm-hmm. So you do see that. Yeah. You do have that. It cuts both ways.
Well, we did a podcast, one of our first ones that Mark and I did, and it was on a similar topic, right? Where one generation builds something, then the next generation, they kind of manage it, and then by the third generation, it goes away.
And it's very sad.
It's sad. It's a sad thing. So Tanya, you and Rick have obviously built an incredible partnership in this industry. What do you think has been the key to success working on a team?
Well, it's funny. Rick and I started actually working together when he was still with Republic Ranches. We did a lot of collaboration together there. And probably, 6 months ago or so, Beach out us. And now we were it's funny because
yeah, you there did. Was you beat me out of that listing. Go ahead and say it. Yeah, you did. Yeah. I took note.
No. There's that there competitive was, spirit.
I'm not like losing.
I wasn't going to say that. I was going to leave it neutral there. But, you know, no, it was funny because we were out, we were unknowingly competing for this one ranch over off I-10. And I think we were at Guadalajara's or something one day. And he's sitting there and starts telling me, oh my gosh, I got this great ranch list. And he starts showing me pictures, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, oh my God, I can't say anything, but I don't want to be so I'm in this position of, oh, what do I do? You know, but I've already been there, submitted mine. He obviously has. It was an estate, and he had one of the son-in-laws he was working with, and the other son-in-law was working with me. And so anyway, at the end of it, it's like, you know, okay, we just realized I think we need to join forces here. This is kind of funny.
Great.
But yeah, the thing about us is, you know, I think with him, we both have our strengths and weaknesses,
right.
but they complement each other for sure. So whenever we go on a listing appointment, we kind of go together. I'll bring him on mine. He brings me on his and vice versa. And it's like, it just kind of takes out everything. We bring our A game and we have no weaknesses when we're there together. And people like that and they understand
Absolutely.
It, recognize. So it kind of sets us apart, I believe, from everybody in that area for sure, in that market. It's really been great.
And I think it helps too. I love working with Tanya because it just everything she just said, plus she can take and talk to a female, to a wife or the other side of the equation here that has most of the vote. And it just works out real well that I can go off and talk to the husband about the tractor, the ponds or whatever. And she can be talking about the house or whatever
or the
they need to talk to.
Right.
And so it we do complement each other very well and have a great time working together. And our spouses get along really well too. So
And the clients really like it. Because say if I'm going out of town here coming up, for instance, for when he's there, he's covering it. He knows what's going on and vice versa. And the same thing with the rest of our team. We're very cohesive and we're there to help each other out. Which
and we
the
answer
clients like
our telephones.
Very important.
That's great.
Right.
Yeah.
They'd be surprised. Well, no, I'm sure you know, it's hard to get a person nowadays.
So I know we touched on this earlier, but in our world with financial planning and investing for our clients, a lot of our clients, like we mentioned, are high net worth clients, and they focus a lot on legacy, what mm-hmm. they're going to leave to their kids and their grandkids and how that fulfills them today. So Tanya, what personal fulfillment or legacy aspects do your clients often talk about after investing in ranch land?
Yeah, that's insightful because it's so true. I mean, it's more than just a financial decision. Obviously it is, but it goes deeper than that. I think for them, they do look at this as an investment in their family and their quality time together. You know, Texas is a unique state, as we all know. It's mm-hmm. It was the Republic of Texas. It's still kind of separate, but yet together.
Oh, yeah.
So to own a piece of Texas is saying something, you know, and this goes for people that are outside of the state or coming in from other countries. They still, when they get to Texas, I can speak for my fiance, mm-hmm. From Italy. He loves, 1836, man. He's just all in. I mean, they get the value of what went into the state and what the value of this land is. And so for them to have something like that, I mean, I've seen them not just use it for their family too. They bring their ministry things. They bring a corporate aspect to it. They'll use it for their corporate retreats. I mean, there's so much there that they can do. And, you know, they always talk about their family, though, and their grandkids or this and that. And you go in there, they built a bunk room. They built all these beds for that purpose. So it's just something that goes deeper. It's our roots here. It's in our roots and our blood that to own a piece of Texas.
So, oh, I love it.
That's awesome. You know,
I love hearing
that's
that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The come and take it, right?
That's, yeah.
Come and take it.
That's right.
I'm sure by the end of this podcast, you'll learn that I watch a lot of TV and watch a lot of movies, but I imagine that show Yellowstone, what Kevin Costner brought a lot of attention to ranching, and I bet you it sparked a desire or a dream in a lot of people after watching that show, and they're like, hey, I want a ranch. Anyway, another show I've been thinking about while we're watching.
That's all he does.
Doing this podcast.
Yeah. Win silver medals, financial planning, and watch TV.
The show Tiger King. Have you heard of that show?
Oh my gosh,
well,
yes.
Every time I drive, I forget what highway it is, but on our way to Austin, there's always some kind of ranch that we drive by, and there's like zebra and all sorts of interesting animals. Uh-huh. What can people put on their ranch? Like, are there any restrictions?
Not really. I mean, when you're outside of the city, I mean, basically, there's not much zoning that goes on. I mean, as long as you got the high fencing and you've got, I mean, we've got one there south of the Eberly Ranch. I mean, they've got a lot of the livestock. We've had people, I mean, the exotics and stuff like that.
It's a big business.
It is.
It's a huge business in Texas. The exotic industry and the whitetail hunting, all the hunting portion of it is huge. And it also can fall under a lot of the 1D1 land valuation on wildlife management, putting in axes and black buck, fallow, a lot of these exotic animals, which don't fall under the same hunting regulations as the native whitetail deer. So it's a big, big part of Texas, and it's growing.
I think the biggest challenge we've got is the amount of acreage. So, for instance, Washington County, to have 150 acres is getting more rare to come by, okay? Versus we just listed one out in Brewster County, 8 hours away, that's almost 20,000 acres. So you've got to move a little bit more to get to the acreage that would be more beneficial in doing something like that, for instance.
You had mentioned to me before about a story of a man who bought a ranch and he bought some exotics and he made a huge mistake. Can you tell the listeners about that?
Yeah, it's a true story. Can't make it up, but it's a great example of somebody from the city that is learning about buying a country property and all things that go with it. So he wanted to get some of these exotics, some zebras and some black bucks. I can't remember all the different types of animals, but he called around and found somebody in the hill country, and they loaded up a trailer full of these exotic animals, showed up north of Brenham, Texas, and showed up at his place and said, okay, here they are, where you want them. He goes, well, you can just drop them off over there. And the guys kind of looked at each other. They really did him a disservice. I don't know who these breeders were, but it's a true story. They opened up the trailer, opened up the gates, let all these exotics out. Of course, they hit the end of the trailer, hit the ground running, and that was the last they saw of them. It was a low fence barbed wire place. It was not a high fence. It could not hold these animals. They never stopped running until they hit Lake Somerville, I think.
Oh my God.
Never slowed down. And they all just ran off, jumped the fence, and were gone. So, yeah, if you want a lot of these exotics, you pretty much need a high fence.
All right, clients, you heard that. Listeners, you heard it. If you're going to buy a ranch, call Tanya and Rick. Before you even think of buying a ranch, call them. We always like to end with a fun question. So can you both share something that's inspiring you right now? Maybe a book you're reading, a favorite movie, or even a piece of advice that's motivating you lately.
Rick's pointing to me, and we've been struggling on this question, thinking about it when we saw it written here. But I'm going to be completely honest with you. We've been so busy. Mm-hmm. If I had the time to read a book, I would just fall out probably. I mean, I've got a wedding in 2 weeks, had my daughters in May and going to Italy.
Getting married.
Oh, congratulations.
So if I could have the time, if I do read a book, it's usually an audiobook when I'm in the car, because I'm in the car quite a bit. But that's, and I do that quite often, but it's probably nothing that people would enjoy knowing about me.
Well, I think you stated something earlier in the podcast that is pretty motivating, which is compete with yourself. Don't
Absolutely.
Worry about what everybody else is doing. Focus on yourself and try to be the best you can be and maximize your potential.
Absolutely. That's the biggest thing in this business that brings people down is trying to compete with others. And that's just not the way you need to play it, like a golf game. And you have to do the best you can for yourself. in success, you know, Dale Carnegie, you know, do it for the love of it,
right?
Not for the money, and the money will come. Okay. So I never did anything for the money. I do it for the love of it because I love it. I can't put it down. I wake up thinking about it and go to bed thinking about it, which is probably not the best thing, but hey.
It's like Michael Berry says, if you love what you're doing, you never really work a day in
your life. That's right.
Right, yeah.
And shout out to Michael Berry.
There you go.
There you go.
The icon.
Yeah, and do well by doing good.
That's right. Do the right thing, and it's going to pay off.
Absolutely. I love hearing that. And so, by the way, for our listeners, people that have questions, what is the best way for them to contact you? Do you have a website or anything you'd like to tell us about?
We sure do. You can go to www.lifestyleranchhome.com. You can also email us at texaslifestylegroup.com. We do have phone numbers if that's something we should share. You know, you can call me directly or text me 281-507-4808. And Rick, yours is?
I've got a South Texas number still from our ranch down there in Cuero. It's a 361-243-1040, 361-243-1040.
Mm-hmm. And we're all over Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn.
All over social media.
Just Wonderful. Google us and we're there. Yeah.
Well, we were looking at, when you guys have to go, the listeners, check out the website. Some of the photos are incredible. They have a great story.
LifestyleRanchHome.com.
Right. Yeah, LifestyleRanchHome.com under the Compass Real Estate Brokerage, which have been an amazing decision 5 years ago we made.
Actually, also the Compass Ranch and Land, we actually, our marketing, Tanya mentioned it earlier, we had a little surprise today where the Tesnas Ranch actually ran in the San Antonio newspaper today, an article on the Tesnas. So our marketing
They've done that.
That's great.
They go out and get this Chronicle. We had it in the Dallas-Fort Worth. We listed the Tesnas Ranch, which is part of the Brewster Ranch, which is the fifth or sixth largest ranch. Which the Brewster Ranch was 300, almost 400,000 acres right next to us, and it's under contract. So,
no kidding.
Yes. So, we're looking forward to getting a buyer on that one for sure.
Well, thank you guys again for sharing all your expertise. Your stories today is fantastic. It's been a great conversation. I'm sure our listeners are leaving with a better understanding of what it takes to buy and manage a property. If they have any questions, we would obviously tell them who to give a call to. Thanks for coming here. And for our listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Y'all take care.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.